Side 2, Marl Fox by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 53. The High Queen Sylph decrees that you play louder. If you disobey the royal word, you will all answer to the teeth of the deeps. Play louder! You there, bring the chanters, so they may add to the music by singing the High Queen's praises. More water rats were quickly brought to join the band. At a nod from Lontour, the procession continued, the chanters droning along in time with the musicians. All-powerful mighty queen, whose beauty has ne'er been surpassed, far brighter than the sun, whose rays it will outlast, we live to serve you truly until our final breath, knowing you hold all secrets, the power of life and death. Wisest of wise, greatness sublime, rules o'er our isle for all time. Rats with incense burners scurried ahead of the bearers, wafting sweet smoke into the air, so that it would drift down between the curtains. Lontour drew close to the palanquin, and spoke in a comforting, wheedling tone. You see, O Queen, whatever your heart desires is yours. The harsh, rasping voice came back to her, childish and complaining. I cannot bear not to be surrounded by beauty and calm. Oh, my head hurts with the noise of the thunder. Lightning flashes through my brain. Tell them to play louder, Lontour. Louder! The Marl Fox smiled as she bowed low. She resembled the four who had accosted Jangler Swifteye and the Noonvale companions, but was slightly smaller and finer-featured in a sinister way. Silkily she said, Your wish is my command, all-powerful one. Outside Castle Marl, the storm raged on, oblivious of the pathetic sounds from within, as they strove to drown out the greatest sound of all, the power of the weather, combined with the forces of nature. Below, in the rear courtyard, lines of manacled slave beasts, squirrels, otters, hedgehogs, and mice, stood with weary heads bowed in the downpour, waiting for the barred pens to be unlocked. The sadistic slave captain, the water rat Ulleg, lounged under the protruding roof shelter, jangling a bunch of keys at his belt. So then, my lucky lot, you're getting off easy today. Darkness arrived early, cause of the storm, and I ain't standing out in the fields getting drenched. But you'll work twice as hard tomorrow, or you'll feel my whip round your backs. Shrugging his heavy cloak closer about him, Ulleg smiled wickedly at the tired, saturated slaves. Ain't that right? Come on now, let's hear yer. Speak up. The wretched beasts were forced to call out in a chorus, Aye, right, Captain. Ulleg tossed the bunch of keys to a water rat guard. You, open up and get them under cover till dawn. Shuffling through the deepening puddles, the slaves crowded into the pens, throwing themselves down on the damp straw bedding, grateful to be under cover. Locking the pens, the guard returned the keys to Ulleg. Two more guards staggered from the barracks nearby, carrying between them a cauldron of boiled maize porridge, which they placed close to the bars. Ulleg watched the slaves thrusting their paws through and scooping the rapidly cooling mess into their mouths. He shook his head at the pitiful sight. I'm far too kind to you lot. Must be getting soft with me long seasons. Laughing to himself, he strode off to the cover of the barracks, where a warm fire and good food awaited him. Song slept heavily. It was long past dawn when the young shrew called Dippler flicked rainwater at her head. Come on, dozy chops, wake up, or you'll snore until autumn. The squirrel maid had chummed up with the gossam shrew, who was roughly her own age, on the previous evening. Now Song opened one eye and lay unmoving as she threatened her newfound friend. You've just done three things that really annoy me. One, you flicked water on me while I was asleep. Two, you called me dozy chops. Worst of all, though, is number three. You said I snore. For that, my friend, you're going to take an early bath in the stream. Leaping up, she dashed after Dippler, who was very agile and could duck and dodge with ease. They flew past Jangler and Logalog, showering them with the wet bank sand churned up by their paws. Aye, aye, steady on there, you young rowdies. The shrew chieftain shook sand off himself, grinning at Jangler. Wish I had the energy of them two. 'Tis good that your song's palled up with Dippler. That young'un ain't got many friends. He was the one doing guard duty when our boats went missing. Jangler dodged smartly aside as the pair chased by him again. Well, he won't go far wrong with Song. She's a good'un, mate, and she don't make friends lightly. Song and Dippler dodged about a bit more on the bank, then flopped down on the ground, grinning at each other. Dippler held up a paw, panting fitfully.
Truce!
Song nodded.
Truce it is. Look, the rain's almost stopped.
Last night's high wind was gone, and the downpour had slacked off to a fine drizzle, though the skies were still slaty gray. Logalog called out to his shrews,
"Break camp, mates. Grub's all gone. We'll be heading for Redwall and company with Swift Eye and his family. Mayan, Bargle, stick with Grandma Olayo and lend her a paw. Fenno, douse the fire. Splicker, take two scouts and march ahead of us. Bit of luck, and we should make the Abbey sometime in the late noon."
The woodlands dripped water all morning, as the party followed a trail left by Splicker and his scouts. Song and Dippler walked slightly ahead of the main group. Suddenly a big otter emerged from the trees and approached Logalog. The shrew scarcely gave him a glance.
"Morning, Skip."
The big otter returned the greeting noncommittally.
"Morning, Log."
Logalog nudged Jangler.
"This is Skipper of Otters. Skip, meet Jangler Swifteye. We're going to Redwall."
Jangler nodded at Skipper, who winked back in reply.
"So am I, matey. Me and the crew went over the waterfalls 3 days from here, 'cause of the hot, dry weather."
"Huh. Hot and dry? Never expected this little lot. Anyhow, I've left the crew at the falls having fun. I decided to drop back this way and see if everything was shipshape over at the Abbey after the storm.
Where's your boats, mate?"
"'Tisn't like the Gwasom to be hoofing it through the woods."
Logalog rolled his eyes skyward, making light of his misfortune.
"Oh, we lent them to a crowd of water rats and a couple of marl foxes. Don't worry, though, we'll get them back, and make those vermin pay for the hire of 6 good logboats. Take my word for it."
The conversation was interrupted by Splicker, who came trotting back on his own tracks, gesturing with a paw over his shoulder.
"Left the scouts further along the trail, Chief. There was all sorts of noises coming from the edge of the marshy area. Come and see what we found. You won't believe your eyes."
He turned and ran off the way he had come. Their curiosity aroused, the entire party hurried after him. Florian Duggle Wolf Wilfelchop made a brave figure as he stood on the seat of the half-submerged cart like the captain of a sinking ship. In one paw he held the long sword with which Runktip had menaced the marl foxes. It was only a trick stage prop, and kept bending in the middle of its blade. Notwithstanding this drawback, Florian brandished it at the grinning shrews.
"Laugh all you like, you scurvy villains. You'll not take me alive. By the crimson fur you won't, not while there's breath left in this poor body to defend the ladies and the infant, what?"
One of the slaves laid his rapier on the ground.
"We ain't gonna hurt you, mate. You've got my word on it. Youch!"
Dwapple hung over the back of the cart, loading another stone into his small sling. He announced with an innocent smile,
"I'm a hinfant. I shooted you wimmy slinger. Hee hee hee."
The shrew rubbed furiously at his swelling nose.
"You little pot scraping. That ain't fair. We came here in peace."
Florian waved the flapping blade of the sword at him.
"A likely story, sir. Peace me flippin' whiskers. I'll have you know you are dealing with a band of expert warriors, trained to slay with a single belly swipe, what?"
Skipper, Logalog, and Jangler arrived on the scene at this point, closely followed by Song and Dippler. Song immediately went to the injured shrew and held a pawful of damp moss to his nose.
"What's going on here, may I ask?" she said.
At the sound of a sweet musical voice, Florian was transformed. Sweeping off his straw hat, he bowed so low that he almost fell into the mud surrounding the cart.
"Faith, miss, your tones are music to my ears, what? Pray dissuade those small surly rogues from attacking us. We are innocents lost, a simple troop of strolling players, ravaged by an unseasonable quirk of the weather, and unjustly menaced by savage spike-furred persons."
The shrew took the damp moss from his nose long enough to argue back.
"You flop-eared old fraud! You was the one going to attack us."
Deesum showed herself, wringing a large flowered kerchief anxiously.
"Oh, desist from bickering and help us, please."
Gallantly, Skipper and Jangler helped the troop from the cart, taking care to swing them out clear of the mud. Introductions were made all around as the Gwasom rolled their canvas sails into long bands, attaching them to the cart like tow ropes. Skipper and Jangler found a good stout yew limb to use as a lever. The cart rocked back and forth, making wet sucking noises, as the team of Gwasom pulled, and skipper levered. Jangler found the shaft and the cross-tree beneath the mud and hauled. With their combined efforts, they soon had the cart back on firm ground. Skipper shook mud from himself as Florian thanked him.
"My, my, what a stout feller you are. Stout fellers all, in fact. Let us put on a performance for you in gratitude for your sterling services in recovering our jolly old transport, what?"
Skipper could not help smiling at the effusive hair.
"Lucky you never went any further afore you got stuck, matey. That's a swamp out there, and there wouldn't have been a trace of you creatures or your cart in the middle of the marshes."
"Ooh." Deesum did a graceful swoon and fainted. Jangler indicated her prone form with a nod at Elio.
"Bring her round, Mum. Mr. Florian, your performance'll have to wait till another time. We've got to get to Redwall Abbey afore dark."
Florian did a comical double-take.
"Redwall Abbey, sir? Capital! The very place we are proceeding to. Mayhap we can wend our way together. Strength and unity, you know. I can defend you from any blackguards, rogues, or hard paws we may encounter on the way. Lead on, my good fellow, lead on!"
Deesum gave a yowl and sprang upright. Boracle looked in awe at Elio.
"You soon brought her out of that faint, Marm. You must have good medicine."
Elio clambered up into the cart.
"Good medicine, nothing. I could tell she was faking, so I just bit the tip of her tail. That brought her round all right. This is a good little cart. Save my old paws a bit. Move over, young'un."
Dwopple moved, scowling at the old squirrel.
She scowled right back. "Just put a paw near that slingshot of yourn, and I'll bite your tail clean off, to teach you good manners."
Elikim the otter yelled,
"Here's the good old sun come to chase the dull clouds away."
After the prolonged rain, wind, and dark skies, a bright summer sun set every beast's spirits soaring. Cheering and laughing, they continued their journey to Redwall. Late afternoon found Troglo and Danflor out on the path by the abbey, gathering dandelions and the sticky-budded burdock. The cellar-keeper explained the finer points of the plants as they culled them into a rush basket.
"Dandelions, now, you can use them for brewing or in salads. Pick the young'uns with plenty of buds on. They're the sweetest."
Danflor smelled the lemony fragrance of a young bud and nibbled it.
"Right, Troglo. They do taste good. Which burdock do I pick?"
The hedgehog pointed them out.
"Those smaller ones. They're the lesser burdock, much better than the biggins, which are called greater burdock. Good juice and lesser burdock. You can use it for treating burns and bruises, or you can take the whole plant for brewing, or use the stalks in salads, too." "Hold hard there, young Dan. Who be they coming up young path?"
Danflor shaded his eyes against the sun, watching the strange assortment of creatures and the canvas-covered cart approaching the abbey. An otter out in front raised his paws and called out,
"Redwall!"
Troglo climbed out of the ditch where they had been gathering plants, wiping his paws on his apron. He chuckled.
"Me old pal Skipper, and some friends by the look of 'em. Go and give the bells a toll, Dan. Let every beast know we got company."
The young squirrel scampered off, delighted to have the privilege of being bell-ringer. Hurrying into the ground floor of the bell tower, he grabbed the two ropes, one in each paw, high up, and pulled with all his might.
Bong! Boom!
Danflor's footpaws shot off the floor. He dangled there a moment, then came down to the ground again as the bells tolled a second time. Releasing the ropes, he ran outside and joined the Redwallers, who were hurrying toward the gate, eager to meet the visitors. Danflor's father recognized a friendly face instantly. Hugging and backpatting, they greeted one another.
"Jangler Swifteye, you haven't changed a hair since the old days." "Ha, ha, ha! Neither have you, Rusval Raguba, you old warrior." "Elio Rimrose, you look well." "Ha! I'll wager that's your daughter, Jangler.
A lot prettier than you, but she's got your long eyelashes. Come here, son. I want you to meet my old pal Jangler and his family. This is Danflor Raguba, son of a warrior."
Song shook Danflor's paw. "I'm Song Breeze Swifteye, but they all call me Song."
"Pleased to meet you, Song. I'm Danflor, but they call me Dan."
"Where's your mother, Dan? Is she here?"
Danflor looked down awkwardly.
"She died when I was very small. I don't even remember her."
There was a moment's embarrassed silence, then Dippler bounded up.
"Hello. You found another pal for us, Song. Don't introduce him. I'll guess his name before the season's done." Song gave the shrew a playful shove. "This is Dippler. He throws water on squirrels when they're trying to sleep. Dippler, meet our new friend Dan."
Brother Melilot had been holding a whispered conversation with Badger Mom Krega. She nodded in agreement with him. Melilot banged the main gate timbers with a copper ladle to get attention.
"Friends, guests, travelers, whoever you be, welcome to the Abbey of Redwall. Now, do you want to stand out here gossiping and backslapping until dark, or would you like to come along inside and get something to eat?"
Florian's voice rang out over the general chorus of approval.
"Eat, sir. Did my ears deceive me, or did some beast mention victuals? Lead me to the jolly old table, and I'll show you what a peckish thespian can accomplish, armed only with a mouth and appetite, what?"
Poor Mole Gubbio murmured to Gerbil Sellermole,
"Hur, woe be usins, I'll wager yon creature's girtly ungered."
Sister Slowey, who had heard the remark, nodded agreement. "That hare looks as if he could strip the orchard bare on his way to clean out the kitchens." The visitors were seated on the lawn, close to the abbey pond, while numerous Redwallers hurried off to the kitchens to prepare food for them. Logalog, Jangler, and Florian sat apart from the rest, and quietly reported the Marlfox sightings to Krega, Friar Butty, and Nutwing. The blind badger listened carefully to what they had to say before giving her verdict.
"I'd always thought Marlfoxes were a legend, some kind of bogey beast, whose name is used to frighten naughty dibbons. But in the light of what you have told us, I think there could be great danger in their presence around Mossflower."
Nutwing preened his wing feathers thoughtfully.
What's to be done about them? Logalog says that they've got a considerable number of water rats, and that means extra trouble."
Friar Butty looked around the group.
"We need the advice of an abbey warrior. Trouble is, old Abbot Arvin was the last Redwall champion, but he's passed away. I don't suppose any of you creatures would have a suggestion."
Jangler's slitted eyes betrayed little as he spoke his piece.
"Here's what you do. First you shut that abbey gate tight. No beast leaves Redwall, except for scouting patrols. Our friend Logalog can organize his blossom shrews for that. Meanwhile, we'll use what warriors we have to organize defenses. Skipper, Russell, and myself."
Krega's heavy paw patted Jangler's shoulder.
"Thank the seasons we're not without sensible warriors. You arrived at Redwall not a moment too soon, friend. Friar Butty, what do we know of Marlfoxes?
Is there anything in the abbey recordings that might help us?"
"I'll take a look, Marm. Mayhap you'll help me, Nutwing."
The owl began polishing his spectacles on his breast feathers.
Of course I will. I'll do my best to remember all you say."
Jangler had another suggestion to make.
"If you want to know about Marlfoxes, I'd start by asking my old mum, Elio. She's never spoken too much about it, but I'm sure she's got a couple of tales concerning such beasts."
Meanwhile, over by the pond, Dan scooted a flat pebble out over the surface, counting the number of times it skipped.
"I make that 5. Of course, I'm pretty used to this pond. See how many times yours bounces, Song?"
The flat brown pebble Song had found skimmed out while they watched it.
4. No, 4 and a little one."
"Oh, go on, then. We'll call it 5.
Righto, Dippler. Let's see if you can beat 5.
The young wassum shrew picked up a pebble, not bothering about its shape or weight, and slung it almost haphazardly, turning to face his friends as the stone skipped on its journey across the water.
8. But you must remember that I was born around water, been skimming stone since afore I could speak."
Danflor was watching the main abbey door from the corner of one eye, and now he noticed Brother Melilot emerge with a ladle and a flat pan. The young squirrel smiled slyly at his companions.
You two are pretty clever at most things, aren't you? Well, let's see how good you are at being first in for scoff."
He took off from them at a dead run, on the same instant that Melilot began banging the ladle against the pan and shouting,
"Victuals ready in Great Hall! Come and get 'em, one and all!"
Song and Dippler pursued Dan, berating him.
"You crafty rotter, wait for us! Tree Walloper, least you could have done was give us a level start."
Mokun, the Marlfox, pointed to a sheltered creek at the streamside, raising his voice.
"This should do. Pull in here, and hide the boats under those trees.
The female marl fox, Zyril, leapt ashore and watched until the last logboat had turned into the inlet. When the water rats had disembarked, she called two of them.
Alag, Ruheb, take 6 trackers apiece. Spread out and go separate ways. Find our brothers and sisters and bring them back here.
Mokun stretched wearily out beneath a spreading sycamore, glad to be free from the confines of a logboat's prow. He snapped out orders to the water rats standing to attention along the bank.
Get the nets. Find fish. Archers, bring down some birds. You 4, collect wood and get a fire going. Dry wood, mind. We want as little smoke as possible. Bring fruit and berries, only the ripest ones. You, spread my cloak carefully over that bush to dry out.
As the rat scurried to do his bidding, Zyril sat down beside him, nibbling at a juicy grass blade. The Abbey of Redwall is not far west of here. Mokun closed his eyes, savoring the sun's warmth.
I know that, but we don't make a move until the trackers find Vannon, Askrod, Jeltor, and Predak, and bring them back here. Relax, Fixen. There's no hurry.
However, Zyril was unable to rest. She paced the bank, honing her axe blade on a sliver of shale.
I'll relax when we're back on the island with that mother of ours. Half-witted old fool. You'd think she has enough possessions.
But no, all she does is witter on from morn till night.
I must be surrounded by beauty. I must be surrounded by beauty.
I don't know how our sister Lontua stands it. I'd like to surround her with a couple of boulders tied to her neck and drop her in the lake. Then she could be surrounded by fishes.
Mokun opened one eye.
It's treason to speak about the High Queen in such a manner. You know that?
Zyril snorted contemptuously and flung her axe. It buried its blade deep in the sycamore trunk. Mokun sniggered dryly.
Temper, temper, sister of mine. That sort of behavior won't do you any good.
Zyril's pale eyes blazed. She pushed aside a water rat, sending the creature staggering into the shallows as he tried to hold on to the bundle of kindling wood he was carrying. The vixen marl fox jerked her axe blade viciously from the sycamore trunk.
High Queen, Sylph is naught but a doddering old wreck who hides behind silken curtains. Why doesn't she die and leave the island to us, her own brood?
Mokun raised himself on one paw, smiling.
That's when the trouble will really start. There's 7 of us. We'd never be able to share all that wealth and rule the island together from Castle Marl. Not without killing each other off. Remember, we're Marl foxes, born to stealth and deceit. Only one of us could ever rule the island.
Zyril made as if to sheathe her axe blade beneath her cloak. Then instead she suddenly brought it about in a scything swipe, only to find it locked against the curve of her brother's axe. Mokun forced the vixen's axe to the ground and trapped it beneath his footpaw. He continued smiling at Zyril.
You see what I mean, sister?
6. Jangler Swifteye gazed in awe and admiration at the tapestry hanging on the west wall of the Abbey's great hall. It depicted vermin fleeing in all directions from the figure standing boldly at its center, Martin the Warrior. The armor-clad mouse leaned upon the hilt of his fabulous sword, a friendly, reckless smile on his striking features. Jangler whistled softly.
Now there stands a warrior among warriors by the seasons. He looks so confident and strong. Small wonder those vermin are fleeing for their lives, mate.
Rustful pointed to the name embroidered on the border.
Aye, that's Martin the Warrior. He was the creature who freed Mossflower from tyranny and helped to found this Abbey of Redwall. I felt just as you do when I first saw him. This tapestry means a great deal to any creature calling itself a Redwaller. But come and join the company at Vittles, before that hare and his performing troop do a vanishing act with all the food. Twist me tail. Those actors can put it away.
Florian Dugglewolf Wolfachop was on his 4th bowl of summer salad with celery cheese and barley bread. Between salads he had demolished a number of strawberry cream tarts, a mushroom and leek pasty with gravy, and a portion of woodland trifle topped with meadow cream that would have fed 4 dibbins for 2 days. The hare waggled his ears appreciatively.
I say, you chaps, this spread is abso-jolly-lutely inscrunchable. My compliments to the cook, Lady Craigamarm.
The badger mom put aside her apple turnover with maple syrup.
Tell him yourself, Mr. Florian. He has just resigned at the thought of having to cater for you again.
The entire table of guests fell about with laughter. Florian looked slightly baffled and attacked a wedge of plum pudding pensively.
Flippin' strange feller.
You'd think a cook could enjoy serving up dinner to a chap who enjoys his tuck, what?
Danflor sat between Song and Dippler, advising them on the fare. Here, Dip, try some of this candied fruit sponge. You'll like it.
Song, here's some deeper never turnip and tater and beetroot pie.
Poor Mole winked broadly at the pretty young squirrel.
Her, you'm going to like it, missy. Usens heat it night and day. Tis he Mole's favorite grub, or I.
Russell treated Jangler to a tankard of October ale and a thick slab of yellow cheese studded with hazelnuts and carrot, with a small farl of hot brown bread.
Get that down your famine-fed chops, mate. 'Twill make you feel like a real warrior.
Jangler's hooded eyes gazed around at the scene.
I came here once when I was but a mite. Have you ever seen a more cheery and welcoming bunch than these Redwallers? No wonder travelers tell tales and legends of this abbey.
Dwapple was sitting on Skipper's lap, in company with Blinny and Wugger. The otter chieftain allowed them to sample his soup.
Eat arty, mateys. 'Tis called water shrimp and ot-root soup, full of dried water shrimps, bulrush tips, ransoms, watercress, and special spices. Otters like it, 'cause it makes them big and strong.
Sister Slowey wrapped Skipper's paw with her fork.
You are naughty, Skipper. Those dibbins won't be able to cope with your dreadful hot spicy soup.
The big otter chortled as he saw the dibbins ladle soup from his bowl.
Marm, begging your pardon, but I'm a great believer in letting young'uns find out things for theirselves. This'll learn them a lesson.
However, contrary to expectations, Dwapple and the mole babes thoroughly enjoyed the fiery concoction.
Brr, ye soup be lovely and warm. I dearly likes good soup. Mmm, Dwapple have more of dis soup, tasty nice.
The delicious repast continued until late evening, when candles and lanterns were lit in Great Hall. During a lull in the proceedings, Logalog hailed Florian.
Ahoy there, matey. How's about you and your troop putting on that show you promised, when we rescued your cart from the swamp?
The hare stood and bowed to the assemblage.
Why not indeed? The wandering Noonvale companions would be churlish in the extreme, not to return the compliment of such fabulous fare. But I know that seated here at table this evening is one among us who possesses a voice of pure gold, Jangler's daughter, who is aptly named Song. Mayhap she would honor us? In anticipation of this, I myself scribed a small ballad.
Florian produced a scroll with a resounding flourish.
Ahem! A few simple lines I recorded while in the pause of the muse, what? Goes to the tune of Breeze in the Meadow. Do you know that one, Song?
The young squirrel took the scroll and studied the lines.
I'd be pleased to, sir. These words fit the tune nicely. Father?
Jangler smiled proudly as he played the introduction on his reed flute. Song clasped her paws in front of herself and took a deep breath. All eyes were riveted on her as the first heartbreakingly sweet notes poured forth, echoing slightly through the ancient hall.
Our thanks to you, friends, our thanks to one and all, for kindly asking us to join you at Red Wall. We saw from afar, just as we thought we should, your abbey like a gem set in moss flowers' green wood. The welcome you gave us was like we'd never known, like family you treat us, as if we were your own. The bells tolled so pretty, out o'er the countryside, a message of friendship it echoed far and wide. The food and drink you gave us was wonderful, and yet, 'tis you and your friendship that we'll never forget.
Song's parents and Grandma Eloyo congratulated her heartily, as the rafters rang with admiring cheers and applause for her singing. Florian and the two brothers, Boracle and Elicum, took the floor next. The hare reversed his frock coat and tied the sleeves about his neck so that it hung down behind like a cloak, stuck a golden twirling mustache to his upper lip, and struck a noble pose. The otters fitted brass rings to their ears, put on ragged breech clouts, and brandished a pair of floppy stage swords. Florian explained the scenario to his audience.
And, now, good creatures of this awesome edifice, we wish to present a historical entertainment. The Duel of Insults. This was a hactual incident involving my great ancestor, one Balo de Quincewald, and two vermin ferrets, who would not let him pass. Picture the scene, then, a narrow trail running through a woodland glade, and here comes I, the gallant hare Balor.
Florian strode breezily across the floor, stopping short of the two otters, who were trying their best to resemble a pair of evil ferrets. The hare greeted them civilly enough.
"Good morrow to you both, sirs. Pray stand aside and let me pass through the woodlands, for I am but a travelling gentle beast, what?"
The two otters paced toward him, waving their swords savagely.
"Ha-ha! No beast passes here and lives to tell the tale. Aye, to pass safe you must first defeat us in combat. Draw your sword!"
The hare spread both paws dramatically wide. "Alas, I am unarmed. But stay, I shall defeat you both, though not with any mere weapon. Nay, I will use only my thunderous voice and sparkling wit, and they will suffice to vanquish you both. In short, I challenge you to a duel of insults, you foul and feckless ferrets."
Elikam and Boracle scowled wickedly and began their insulting. "You rotten rip-eared rabbit! You lanky, lopsided lettuce leaf!"
Florian appeared to sway slightly, but stood his ground, jaw out-thrust.
"Ho, ho! Is that the best you can do? Well, let a champion show you a thing or two."
Wugger shouted out encouragingly,
"Go on, sir! You'm showy vermins!"
Others began egging him on. He held up a paw for silence, then launched into his tirade.
"You misbegotten, muddle-headed mudmuckers! Slop-pawed, fiddle-faced, bottle-nosed, baggy-bottomed, bucket-bellied, beetle-brained beasts!"
The two make-believe ferrets looked aghast, falling back several paces under the onslaught. Then they recovered and retaliated.
"Stinky, string-pawed, snaggle-toothed, slop-swiller! Aye, filthy, frog-faced, flippin', foozle-backed fop!"
The hare threw a paw across his brow and reeled about, as if wounded by the barbed words. Excitement broke out among the onlookers, as Elikam and Boracle swaggered about triumphantly.
"Fight back! Don't let vermin shout things at you like that!"
Dwaffle shook a clenched paw at the ferrets.
"Nut-nosed, knocky-kneed, smelly paws!"
Decem covered his mouth, shocked.
"My dear, where did you learn such horrid expressions?"
Florian, alias Valaw, was back insulting gallantly.
"Toothless, twuggle-tongued, twittering tripounds! Slack-gutted, slime-sided, sludge-hearted, spiritless spit-spatterers!"
The ferrets began to sink to the floor under the weight of insults. Redwallers rose, clapping and cheering as they urged the heroic hare on to greater efforts.
"Don't stop! You've got 'em now!"
"Aye, carry on, sir! Give it to 'em hot and heavy! Show the villains who's boss!"
"Verhur, you'm tell 'em what you'm think of 'em, sir!"
Florian strode bravely forward, cloak swirling as he finished off the retreating foe-beasts with resounding phrases.
"Addle-tongued, apple-necked, amateur animals! Baldy-backed, bumptious, bird-brained bootlickers! Craven-tailed, crumpet-faced curs! Despicable, dungeon-eared doodle-bugs! Entrail-eaten, egg-headed eyesores! Foul-furred, frog-fearing felons! Knit-nosed, chop-cheeked, dishwater-drinkers! Loppy-lugged laggards! Begone, fatuous ferrets!"
As Elikam and Boracle dropped their tails and scrabbled off on all fours, the hare swaggered victoriously through the imaginary woodland glade. Every creature in Great Hall cheered him to the echo, leaping up on the tables and applauding wildly. Florian took a jug of strawberry fizz from a passing mole server and drained it at a single draught. He bowed deeply, trying modestly to prevent himself from belching. The Dibbons thought it great sport to dash about the tables, trying out newfound insults on their elders.
"You'm a girt baggy bum beetle, sir, her, and a foozle face, too."
"Hee, and you a flitty nose and a doogle duck figgle face, so there."
Stifling a smile, Kregger rapped on the table for silence.
"That's quite enough for one night. Up to your beds, Dibbons."
Grandma Alayo agreed wholeheartedly.
"Aye, and bed for you too, Mr. Florian. Shame on you, teaching little uns language like that. Go wash your mouth out."
Florian protested volubly.
"But, madam, 'twas only an entertainment, a historical play. What about the two otters? They said some jolly dreadful things."
Elikam and Boracle sipped cold mint tea innocently.
"What, us?
Oh, marm, Mr. Florian beats us if the insults don't sound bad enough."
"So he does. We never used words like that afore we joined up with Mr. Florian's troop. We were brought up to be gentle beasts."
Sister Slowey shook her paw reprovingly at the bewildered hare.
Double shame on you, sir, for teaching these poor creatures dreadful things. What would their mother say if she could hear them?
Gathering his cloak about him, Florian strode off in a huff toward the dormitory stairs. He turned and paused on the bottom step, his voice quavering with emotion.
Culture is wasted upon such as you. I am injured, ma'am, deeply and sorely injured. I bid you good night.
He tripped upon his coat hem and fell flat on the stone stairs. The Redwallers were in hoots of laughter as Runktip called out,
"Which is the most deeply injured, sir, your feelings or your bottom?"
Skipper of Otter's face was almost purple. The hedgehog had made the remark as Skipper was downing a beaker of cider, and now he spluttered and choked as he tried to stop laughing. Russell pounded his back.
"I think we'd all be better going to bed afore any beast else injures theirselves too deeply."
Badger Mom Krega never slept in bed, but propped herself up with pillows on the armchair in her room. Redwall Abbey was peaceful and quiet after the feast and entertainment, but the blind badger could not prevent her thoughts from straying. With marl foxes and water rats roaming Mossflower, how long was the peace and quiet destined to last? Jangler and Russell, like the instinctive warriors they were light sleepers, and both squirrels were up and about in the hour before dawn. They met in the kitchens, where Jangler found his friend lifting a few hot scones from under the noses of three slumbering night cooks. Russell was armed with his favorite short javelin, which he tipped toward Jangler, who crept over to join him.
"Good morning, mate. What are you up to?"
Jangler quietly lifted a small flask of elderflower cordial from the stone cooling cupboard.
"Just a feeling I had. Thought I'd take a bite of breakfast and a stroll around the grounds, you know. A sort of patrol."
Russell added a few scones to the ones he already had stowed in a clean napkin. He winked knowingly.
"Shows how a warrior thinks, eh? I had exactly the same idea. Well, I've got the scones, and you've got the cordial, so what are we waiting for?"
The three night cooks, who were taking an early nap on a heap of empty sacks, slept on, unaware that the squirrels had been and gone. Starting at the gatehouse, Jangler checked the main gate bars, ensuring the heavy oak bolsters were secure in their slots. He joined Russell at the gatehouse window.
"Main gate's well locked. All quiet here?"
His companion peered through a gap in the curtained window panes.
"Not exactly quiet. Old Friar Buddy and Nutwing are in there snoring like thunder, in the middle of all those scrolls and volumes."
Jangler shook his head disapprovingly.
"Should have at least one able-bodied beast who can stay awake in charge of this entrance. Shall we go up on the battlements?"
Russell swept the inner grounds with a wave of his javelin.
"Best cover the inside first, then we'll take a turn around the wall tops."
They headed toward the southwest corner, Jangler munching away at a scone.
Hot and fresh, like a good scone ought to be. I never tasted anything nicer than Redwall Abbey victuals in all my life, mate."
Russell passed him the cordial flask.
"Then why don't you stay? There's always a place for a useful squirrel like yourself here. I gave up wandering when I lost my poor dear wife. Redwall's home to me in Danfloor now."
Jangler gave the matter serious consideration.
I've still got my family about me, though my mom's getting too old to be traveling these days. I know Rimrose likes the Abbey. She said so last night, hinted that it'd be a good place to bring our Song Breeze up in, and I agree with her. Pretty young maid like Song shouldn't spend her seasons roaming the woodlands and dales. Redwall's a place she can meet nice friends and grow up good."
They continued in this vein, strolling along the south grounds, conversing quietly, but checking carefully around bushes and shrubbery, their keen eyes constantly searching for things other beasts would miss, disturbed dew on the grass, or a freshly broken stem. Everything was in order. As they approached the small wall gate set in the center of the east wall, both stopped talking and stood still. Jangler's heavy-lidded eyes fixed themselves on the wall gate. He whispered,
"Listen, can you hear that scratching noise?"
Russell nodded, pointing his javelin tip at the door jamb.
"Look."
The door was a solid little affair, made from close-jointed elm planks painted green. It had a single heavy iron bolt securing it. The scraping noise started up again, and a narrow strip of soft metal, hooked at one end, poked through a fresh gap made in the door jamb by a knife. Jangler looked at the wood shavings on the ground and took in the full situation at a glance.
"Some beast trying to push the bolt back and open the wall gate."
Now they could hear gasping and muttering from outside.
Humph! Grumph! Should have cut a wider gap for this to go through. Ouch! You've trapped my paw. Let go, I can do it.
Russell pointed silently to the wall top. Careful to make no noise, they hurried back and dashed up the southeast wall steps. Dropping flat on the ramparts, both squirrels wriggled swiftly toward the center of the east wall. Straightening cautiously, they peered down between the battlements. Four water rats were at the gate, one with his body flattened sideways against the door as he strove to hook the metal device over the bolt and push it open. The others were either urging him on or telling him to let them try to do it. Mouth close to Jangler's ear, Russell whispered,
"Four of 'em."
Jangler scoured the scene thoroughly, eyes flicking from side to side.
"Russell, wait. There's five. See the Marl Fox leaning on that ruin?"
The Marl Fox Geltor, unaware that he was being watched, struck the tree trunk impatiently.
"Hurry it up, Thatcher. What's the matter? I thought you were supposed to be good at opening locks."
A rattle of metal upon metal sounded out. The rat Thatcher straightened up confidently, assuring his master,
"I think I've got it, sire. The hook's over the bolt end."
Jangler nudged Russell urgently.
"Best put a stop to this before they're in. I'll take Thatcher. You pick off the Marl Fox." "Now."
Jangler leaned out over the battlements and whirled his sling. Thwack! Thatcher was slain instantly as the big round river pebble struck him square between the eyes. Russell threw his javelin. It was only Geltor's swiftness that saved his life. He saw the rat fall as the slingstone struck, and glancing up at the wall top, he could see Jangler, sling in paw at the battlement, with Russell to one side of him, launching the javelin. The Marl Fox threw himself to one side, but not fast enough. The javelin, which was aimed at his chest, missed any vital spot, but took a chunk of flesh from his shoulder, pinning his cloak to the rowan. Stifling a shriek of pain, Geltor ripped the cloak free as he fell on all fours. Not waiting to see what fate befell the other three rats, he took off through the undergrowth, crouching low and clasping his wounded shoulder. Instantly the remaining rats fled, sent on their way by another stone from Jangler's sling, which cracked the tail of the last one, stumbling into the cover of the trees. The squirrels immediately hurried from the wall top back down to the gate. Jangler unlatched the metal hook from the protruding bolt end and inspected the device.
That rat knew what he was doing. A good shove or two, and they would have been in.
Let's see if he's still alive. They unlocked the gate and stepped out into Mossflower Wood. Russell turned the rat over, placing a paw on the creature's heart.
Humph! Won't get anything out of this'un. Dead as a doornail.
The rat was long and thin. He wore a gray tunic with a wide belt in which were stuck a dagger and a curved sword, the only other item he possessed being a half-length black cape. Russell rolled the carcass into some deep loam beneath a spreading buckthorn bush. Jangler heaved on the javelin, tugging it from the rowan trunk.
"You had tough luck there, mate. He moved a bit too fast for you."
Russell cleaned his javelin tip by jabbing it in the earth.
"Maybe. But one thing I'm sure of now, Marl Foxes ain't magic. They're quick, but they can't vanish like some say they do. Don't worry, I'll get him next time."
Dawn was up now, rosy and clear. They strode back to the abbey, finishing the last drop of cordial. Jangler licked his lips.
"I'm ready for a proper breakfast now.
Don't mention what happened back there to any save those who have to know. Oh, and we'll have to see if those wall gates can be locked up more secure." Mokun, the self-appointed leader of his brother and sister Marl Foxes, sat eating a meal of trout cooked over the fire. Geltor plastered stream mud on his wound, binding it with dock leaves and sorrel. Mokun spat a fishbone at him, curling his lip scornfully.
"Blitherin' oaf! You made a right mess of that plan. Now the Red Wallers are sure to know we're about."
The vixen Predak helped herself to a portion of the trout. "They probably already knew we were in Mossflower, if they have half a brain between them.
Don't blame Geltor. I don't think you could have done any better."
Mokun wiped his paws in the grass, taunting his wounded brother.
"A Marl Fox getting himself wounded by a squirrel, and losing a good water rat into the bargain? Tell me, Geltor, do you think I could have done better?"
Geltor winced as he tied the dressing with green reeds.
"They'll get back more than they gave when I start on them. I'll slay 10 for killing Thatcher, and 20 for injuring me."
Mokun shook his head in disbelief.
You don't understand, stupid. We came to steal, not to start a war. Where's the profit in that?
Jiltor whipped out his axe and gripped the haft tightly.
Blood for blood, I say. Who's with me?
Zyril raised her voice.
It's not blood for blood unless some beast kills a Marl fox. That's our law, brother. Moken's right. We came for plunder, and Redwall Abbey is the only place worth thieving from. You messed things up. Got yourself wounded and lost Fatcher. None of us is with you.
Moken picked his teeth with a fishbone, sneering at Jiltor.
See, for the moment we're robbers, not killers. Haven't you got it into that thick skull of yours? High Queen Sylph must be surrounded by beauty. Rich, wonderful things. That's what we need to bring back to the island. Imagine what she'd do if we staggered back to Castle Marl, with half our number dead because we'd started an all-out war with the beasts of Redwall.
Jiltor slumped against a tree, nursing his wound.
Arr! I don't see the sense to it. Tramping round the woodlands, just to rob stuff to please that crazy old relic. It's daft!
Askrod, who had remained silent until now, spoke up.
Listen, brother. We're storing up these valuables for ourselves. Remember, one day our mother will be dead. Maybe sooner than we think, considering her age. When that day comes, we will rule the island together. Castle Marl, everything, will be all ours.
Zyril chuckled mirthlessly.
Not according to Moken. He says we'll kill each other off until there's only one left to rule, right, Moken?
Moken shrugged.
Who can tell? I say let the future look after itself, and for now we concentrate on that abbey.
Listen, I've got a plan that's a lot wiser and less warlike than Jeltor's was.
Let's get the rats on the march to Redwall. I'll explain to you as we go.
Moken was the toughest and most resourceful of all the brothers and sisters. Even Jiltor went along with the scheme when he heard it. 7. Troglo Spearback and his cellar helpers were good carpenters. By midday they were fitting hinge locks to the wall gates, bolts that doubly secured the doors and could only be opened from inside. Rusful and Janglor were in conference with Logalog, Skipper, and Krega, deciding what the next move should be in the light of that morning's attempted break-in. The wandering Noonvale companions were rehearsing out by the pond, watched by the Abbey Dibbons. Dan was strolling in the grounds with Song and Dippler when Grandma Elio passed them, hobbling toward the gatehouse. Song and her friends took the old squirrel's paws to assist her.
You're in a bit of a hurry, Grandma. Where are you off to? I'm going to the gatehouse, Song, my dear. Your dad said Friar Butty needs me to tell him all I know about those Marl foxes. Oh, can we come too? I love to hear you telling tales.
The old squirrel looked at the three eager young friends. She paused a moment as if undecided, then gave in to the request.
Oh, if you wish. But you must sit still and don't fidget. I can't abide fidgety beasts. Oh, one of you nip back and tell that nice brother Melilot that we'll all be taking lunch in the gatehouse.
Dippler sped off, calling back.
Leave it to me, Marm. I'll go.
A few minutes later, seated comfortably on an old sofa, Elio faced Nutwing, who was perched on an armchair opposite her. Buddy sat on the desk with quill, ink, and parchment. Song and Dan settled themselves on the arms of the sofa. Friar Buddy began.
Now, Marm, I want you to speak slowly and clearly. Address my friend Nutwing as if you were telling him a story. I'll sit over here and record all you say. You may begin if you're ready, Marm.
Elio stroked the smooth top of her blackthorn stick.
Marl foxes. Now let me see. When I was a maid, young as Song here, my father told me of a secret island at the center of a great lake somewhere. Foxes had discovered the island and claimed it for their own. Of course, that was after the lake monster was slain and the white ghost left the island.
Friar Buddy cut in on the narrative.
Excuse me, Marm. What lake monster, and what white ghost?
Grandma Elio sniffed at him irritably.
How should I know? I'm just telling you what was told to me. Can you remember everything from your early seasons?
Buddy held up his paw respectfully.
My apologies, Marm. Please continue. Where was I? Oh, yes. Father said that a tribe of foxes, with water rats to serve them, took over the island and built a big castle there. Then the story went that there was a war. You see, most of the tribe were ordinary vermin, save for two, a male and a vixen, who were marl foxes. It was them who were magic. They could make themselves invisible, 'twas said. Anyhow, the marl foxes got the water rats on their side and wiped out the other foxes, slew them all. Then nothing more was heard of, or from, that island. Now, when I was a bit older, I had a mate, Gaujo, and a little un, too.
That was Song's daddy, Janglor. Gaujo was a real adventurer and a great wanderer, and one day he went off in search of the marl foxes' island, and that was the last any beast ever seen of him. I was left to bring Janglor up. We became wanderers, always hoping we'd find Gaujo again some day, but we never did.
Song took in every word. She felt sorry for Grandma Alayo, bringing up Janglor alone, always searching for her lost husband. It must have been a hard life. She put a paw around her grandma's shoulder as the old squirrel continued. One winter, when Janglor was still only a little un, we were camped in a hole on a stream bank, with naught to eat but a few roots and late berries, and a fire to warm ourselves by. Then, one night, a young kingfisher, half alive and freezing, crawls out of the stream and up the bank to our dugout hole. Poor little bird. I took him in and shared our fire and what victuals we had. This kingfisher told me he'd come from the Great Lake. He lived on the island and was fishing off it when he was set on by a bunch of magpies. They chased him far and left the little bird for dead in the lake shallows. But he wasn't dead, you see, and one way or t'other he managed to get away and survive. I tell you true, I owed me and Janglor's life to that kingfisher. When he got well and could fly again, he brought food to us all winter long. At night, we'd all three of us sit together by the fire to keep warm, and he told me what he knew of the island. Said it was ruled by one marl fox now, a murderous vixen calling herself Queen Silth. The kingfisher said that she had a brood of 7 cubs, all marl foxes, and she slew her mate, 'cause he wanted to call himself king. So then, what do you think of that? Old Friar Butty shook his head to think that such wickedness existed. Song crept down off the sofa arm to sit beside Alayo. What happened to the little kingfisher, Grandma? Alayo stared into the dust motes, swirling in a shaft of golden sunlight from the window, remembering that winter long seasons ago. I recall one morning, 'twas spring, me and little Janglor woke up, and the kingfisher was gone. I never set eyes on him again. But I always hoped that good bird had a happy life, 'cause we owed him a lot. Dippler breezed in with Roop, the mole from the troop, pushing a trolley laden with food between them. The Gwasom Shrew bowed. Lunch is served. Summer vegetable soup, leek and mushroom turnover, an apple and blackcurrant flan, with a nice flagon of rosehip tea to wash it all down. I hope you ain't started telling the story yet, Marm. Nothing better than eating lunch and listening to a good yarn. Alayo heaved herself up with a groan and began dishing out the food. Started? I've done all the tale-telling I'm doing for today, young feller, Mishrew. You're too late. Friar Buddy put aside his quill. So that's all you know about marl foxes, Marm? You can't tell us more? Alayo passed him a plate of food. Aye, right enough, 'tis all. You'd best wash those inky paws before you eat lunch, Friar. Nutwing, who had dozed off halfway through the narrative, awoke with a start, blinking repeatedly.
Lunch? Did some beast mention lunch?
The mouse babe Dwapple and his two new friends, Wugger and Linny, young Redwall moles, were making thorough nuisances of themselves at the wandering Noonvale companions' rehearsal. Runktip was going through his conjuring act, in spite of their constant barracking and interruptions. The hedgehog spread both paws wide, a pebble had vanished, and Florian announced the trick's next stage.
And now, before your very eyes, the great Runktippo magic spike will turn the pebble into a long string of flags, which he will produce from his magical mouth while I give a roll of the drum.
Most of the Dibbons were silent, gazing awestruck at the performance. But Dwapple sniggered villainously as he called out,
"Well, hurry up! Go on with it!"
Florian shot him a glare that would have shriveled lettuce. Silence, please. This is an extremely delicate and dangerous illusion. Kindly refrain from shouting aloud.
Dwapo whispered something to Wugger, who immediately yelled out,
Runk Tippo dropped the pebble on the ground. Tis under his footpaw.
Florian picked up the drumsticks, eyeing Wugger icily.
Any more interruptions, huh? And I will eject you from the audience. Great magic, Runk Tippo. Are you ready?
The hedgehog nodded as Blinny announced what Dwapple had told her.
He can't talk, cause his mouth be girtly full of flags and string.
The final straw came when Florian tried a drum roll, only to find that the drum head merely gave forth a dull, sticky thud.
Sabotage! Some rotten cads poured honey over my drum! Dwapple?
The mouse babe and his companions sensed the game was up. They took to their paws and fled, with Florian hurling dire threats after them.
Fiends! Show wreckers! I'll have you roasted with turnips! I'll chop off your tails with a rusty saw! I'll...
Deesum twitched her nose at the furious hare.
Mr. Florian, you'll stop this unprofessional behavior in front of your audience and continue with the rehearsal.
Behind the bushes by the north wall gate, Dropple sat with the mole babes, wondering what mischief they could accomplish next. He pointed to the battlements.
We go play up on a wall.
But Wugger and Blinny would not hear of it.
Brr, nay, sir, us'uns bain't a-going up there again, ho no.
They contented themselves with banging on an old cooking pot that Blenny kept hidden in the bushes. The mole babes whacked it gleefully with sticks, as Dwapple mimicked the troop's act.
I'm a magic Dwapo! Pull a loss of flags out me nose, hee hee hee!
They marched about behind the shrubbery, banging and yelling.
Us want cake and star beef fizz! Lots of cake, or we don't gar a wash!
On the other side of the wall gate, the vixen Zyril had no need to press her ear against the wood. She turned to Mokin.
You were right. The young ones are there.
Olag, bring the others round here from the south and east wall gates.
Jeltor winced as Mokin patted his injured shoulder.
I told you, sooner or later they play by the gates or on the wall tops.
Now, we only need to snare one, and we won't have to worry about thieving.
Those red wallers will give us what we want when they hear what we could do to a little hostage.
Jeltor moved out of range of Mokin's paw.
Well, let's see you get one of them on this side of the wall.
Mokin loosed the drawstring on a bag he carried beneath his cloak.
Easy. Just watch me.
Dwapple and his friends eventually grew tired of marching and shouting. They were about to run off and see if there was any fun to be had around the gatehouse, when several loud knocks sounded on the wall gate door. The little ones went to the door, listening curiously as the knocking continued. Dwapple picked up a stick and knocked in reply.
Who's there? What you knock for?
The answer came back in a soothing, homely voice.
Who do you think I am, little friend?
The mouse babe pondered a moment, then made up a fictitious name that he liked the sound of.
Stickaby!
A slice of preserved apple, thick with crystallized honey, slid under the narrow gap at the bottom of the door. The voice chuckled.
How did you know my name is Stickaby? Well done!
Dwapple stuffed the delicacy into his mouth. Wugger crouched down and called under the gap.
Some ver Wugger! I want some Stickaby, sir!
Of course you do, Wugger, but you must open the door so that I can give you the whole bagful.
Mokin listened to the sound of tiny paws scraping on the door, followed by the voices of disappointed Dibbons.
Us can't open the locks, Mr. Stickaby. They's too tight.
Jeltor smiled mockingly at the Marl Fox leader.
Oh, dear, what are you going to do now, Mr. Stickaby?
Mokin's paw strayed beneath his cloak. One more word from you, and I'll introduce you to Mr. Axehead. He turned back to the door, his voice cajoling the Dibbons.
Oh, come on now. I'm sure you can open one little lock.
Dwapple sounded impatient at the Marl Fox's ignorance.
It not one little lock, there be's two. One's too stiff, and another one be too far up to reach. Push a more candy fruit under the door, Stickaby. But I can't, my little friend. The fruit slices are too thick to fit under the door. They'd get all dirty and squashed. Look, why don't you come up to the wall top, and we'll think of a way to get the whole bag up to you. Good idea, eh?
Dwapple jumped up and down with excitement.
Aye, good idea, good idea. We go up on a wall.
Wugger and Blenny backed off, shaking their heads vigorously.
Her no, us'ns bain't going on a wall. You um catch great trouble if any go up there, Dwapple.
The mouse babe headed boldly for the north wall steps.
Yeah, you two fraidy frogs.
The moles trundled off to the gatehouse. They had learned their lesson about wall tops. Dwapple looked down at the assembly of rats and marl foxes below on the ground.
Where Mr. Sticker be?
Moken held up the bag of crystallized fruit.
Gone to his house to get more candy sweets like this. Are you the friend he was telling us about?
Aye, my name Dwapple. I'm Mr. Stickerby's friend.
Oh, good. He said I had to give these to you. Here, catch.
Moken tossed the bag, which rose only a short way before falling on the ground. The marl fox shook his head sadly.
I can't throw them high enough for you to catch, little friend.
Dwapple spread his paws expressively.
So what do we do?
Moken paced back and forth, as if deep in thought. Suddenly he clapped his paws and smiled broadly.
Of course. You can come down and get them, Dwapple.
Yah, silly. Dwapple no can climb down a wall.
Moken took off his cloak, gesturing to several rats to get around and hold the edges. They held it high, stretched tight in a great triangle. The marl fox pointed to it, grinning brightly.
Now you can, Dwapple. It'll be great fun. Just jump, and all my friends here will catch you safely.
The mouse babe clambered onto the battlements and looked down doubtfully, not sure whether he would enjoy the experience. Moken leapt onto the cloak, bounced on the taut material once, and jumped back off nimbly.
Ho-ho, that was great. I wish I were up there with you, Dwapple. I'd really enjoy jumping down onto the cloak.
That's unless you don't want the candy sweets, and you're a fraidy frog.
That did it. Dwapple swelled his fat little tummy out and scowled.
Me nor a fraidy frog. Dwapple jump high, higher'n dat, right off atop of Mr. Florian's cart. You watch me. Yee!
Dwapple launched himself off the ramparts. He landed in the center of the cloak, bouncing twice. Moken deliberately trod on Jeltor's footpaw as he passed.
What have you got to say for yourself now, Mr. Oafhead?
The water rats had Dwapple wrapped and bundled in the cloak before he could make another move. 8. Craig of Badgermom and Rimrose completed their after-lunch stroll by calling in at the gatehouse. Grandma Elayo and the owl, Nutwing, sprawled on the old sofa, fast asleep after the amount of food they had eaten. Song, Dan, and Dippler had joined Friar Butty at the table, searching through ancient scrolls and dusty volumes of Abbey records. Rimrose guided Craig to the armchair and seated her.
Phew, 'tis warm out there today.
Song filled two beakers with rosehip tea.
This is nice and cool. Where's Dad?
Craig sipped her tea, the beaker almost lost within her huge paw.
Taking up a new career, I think. He's with Troglo and the Cellar Moles, learning all about October ale and such. When your mom and I passed there earlier, he seemed to be enjoying himself.
Rimrose glanced at the books and documents on the table.
And what are you up to, Missy?
Song flicked idly through the pages of a hefty tome.
We're helping Friar Butty to look for more information about marl foxes. Grandma told us all she knew, but it's not enough.
The blind badger held out her beaker for more rosehip tea.
But she did tell you a few things that you didn't know before?
Friar Butty re-rolled a scroll neatly.
Indeed she did. Although at first her story was a bit muddled. She began talking of a white ghost and a lake monster that lived in a great lake until it was slain. Then she said that the white ghost left the hidden island, but she said she didn't remember much about it. I think it was probably some figment of Elanyo's imagination from her young days.
Craig sat up straight.
Maybe not. I was once badger ruler of the hollow mountain by the sea called Salamandastron. Badgers always rule there. I recall seeing some rock carvings in a chamber on the mountain. I never really paid them much attention. Strange how it comes back to one at the mention of certain words. A lake monster means naught to me. But a white ghost, I remember that. You see, those wall carvings told of all the great badger lords who had held sway on Salamandastron. Two of these were twins, Earthstripe and Earthwhite. I think the tale goes that they were separated at birth and lost to each other. However, Earthstripe discovered his brother, Earthwhite, on an island in the middle of a vast lake. There, Earthwhite, who was born completely white of fur, became known as the White Ghost. They both traveled from the island to Salamandastron, where Earthstripe was Badger Lord. There was a great battle against vermin hordes, and Earthstripe was slain. Earthwhite became Badger Lord in his stead, and was often known to the hares that served the mountain as White Ghost. That's all I can tell you, but it may prove Elio wasn't imagining things. Kregis stopped talking. Holding up a paw for silence, she listened, and after a while she smiled. "Come out, you two! Blinny and Wugger, if I'm not mistaken." The two mole babes crawled from behind the sofa.
"Her, you am serpently bain't mistaken, 'tis us'ns."
"Brr, how did he know 'twas us'ns, Mum?"
Craig had judged they were within paw range, and swept both dibbins up onto her lap.
"I just knowed, that's all. Now, what are you two after in Friar Butty's gatehouse?"
"We am horful thirsty, marm. Be sun be ought out lur."
Song poured them a beaker each of the cool rosehip tea, smiling as she watched them noisily sucking it up.
"Been playing hard, I suppose. Where's your pal got to? That rascally mouse babe Dwapple."
Blinny drained the last of her drink, wiping a paw across her mouth.
"Us'ns never go Donny Waltop, miss. Honest we am didn't."
Buddy wagged his quill pen at the mole babes.
"But Dwapple did, eh? What was he doing up there?"
"He am talking to Mr. Stickaby. We am told him not to go oop there, but Dwapple a lickle naughty beast, her eye."
Friar Butty shook his head wearily.
"He certainly is. Song, would you and your friends like to go and get that little wretch down off the ramparts before he does something silly and injures himself? Which wall was it, Blinny?"
"North wall, zir. He am oop there a-talkin' with Mr. Stickaby."
Danflor patted the mole babe's velvety head.
"Don't you fret, young'un. We'll get Mr. Stickaby down, too, whoever he is. Come on, Dip."
The three chums mounted the wall top by the gatehouse steps and trotted along the north wall. Song searched carefully around the angle of each battlement, while Dippler and Dan covered the east wall adjoining.
"There's no sign of him here, Song."
"No, he's not here either, Dip. What do you think, Dan?"
"Oh, the little wretch probably got fed up and got down by himself. Perhaps he's by the pond. Let's take a look over that way."
Florian and the troop were singing a comic song for their audience, who were not just Dibbins, but many Redwallers who had finished their chores. The onlookers were in pleats, laughing at the antics of the Noonvale companions as they performed funny walks in time to their song, encouraging the Dibbins to get up and join in with them. The little creatures needed no second urging and paraded joyfully with the troop.
"Oh, come along, dearies, follow me. I'll take you down to the sycamore tree. Plum puddin' and turnover, apple pie. Beneath its spreadin' boughs we'll lie, with vegetable pasty and damson tart. We'll wheel it along in a little cart. The birds will sing, 'Give us some, do. Oh, the food's for us, and the crumbs for you. So empty the cupboard out, what do you see? A fruitcake for you, and trifle for me. There's bread and cheese, and what do you think? A jugful of raspberry cordial to drink. A rodel-tee-total and tura-lie-a. What do you think our old mother will say? Riddle-dum-diddle-dum, dairy-down-dare, when she comes home to find her cupboard all bare.'"
Dan caught up with Florian, who leaned against the cart, wheezing after the performance.
"My word! Not as young as I was last season, what?
Sir, have you seen baby Dwapple lately?"
Florian mopped his brow with a red-spotted kerchief.
"That scutterbug! Can't say I have, young laddo. But, with a bit of luck, an eagle may have flown off with the blighter."
Deesum was immediately in the midst of things.
"Eagle? What eagle? Where? Oh, my poor little treasure, he's been carried off in the talons of a huge eagle."
The hare rolled his eyes skyward and sighed.
"Dwapple was not borne off by an eagle, marm. 'Twas merely wishful thinking on my part."
"Huh. Pity the poor eagle that had the nerve to try and make off with that miniature rotter, what?"
Song reassured her. "I'm sure Dwapple is safe, Miss Deesum, somewhere within Redwall. But we can't find him. Blinny and Wugger, the mole babes, were the last to see him on the north wall top. We've looked, but he's not there."
Deesum snatched the kerchief from Florian and wrung it distractedly.
Then we must search until we find the sweet little mite. Every beast, stop what you are doing and search the entire place. Look high and low, drag the pond and scour the cellars.
Florian could not resist a dig at the mouse's dramatics.
Right you are. I'll turn out my pockets and comb my fur.
He wilted as the tough-looking Russell caught him tight by the paw.
A babe is missing. 'Tis no joking matter, and you do well to quit play-actin' and join the search.
Janglor and Troglo searched the cellars. Brother Melilot and foremost Gubbio checked the kitchens. Song and her friends accompanied Sister Slowey through the infirmary and dormitories. The three otters, Boracle, Ellicom, and Skipper, waited until the coast was clear before diving in the abbey pond and covering every fraction of it carefully. Skipper thwacked his wet rudder on the bank, sending droplets cascading wide.
Thank the seasons, the little feller ain't in there.
Runktip and the two moles, Roop and Muggle, had patrolled the orchard twice. They tried to comfort Deesum, who wept pitifully.
There, there now, Miss Deesum. Don't go getting yourself all of a tizzy. That mouse babe's bound to be somewheres in the abbey, or the grounds. Stands to reason, don't it?
Were I. Only gates be well locked oop, and the walls be do I for Maister Dwapple to clamber o'er. Don't he fret, marm. Us'll find him afore long.
Evening came, and still they searched, finding no trace of the mouse babe. Badger Mum Craga and Friar Butty questioned Wugger and Blenny patiently.
What time of day was it when you last saw Dwapple?
Just afore lunch, sir, on a north wall top.
Right. Now what about this Mr. Stickaby? Did you see him?
Oh, no, marm. Usins didn't see him.
Then how do you know there is such a creature?
He him talked to us and give Dwapple a candy sweet.
Friar Buddy scratched his ear distractedly with the quill pen.
But how could he do all that, and you still didn't see him?
"'Cause he were outside, sir, back of ye little wall gate. Stickaby slided Dwapple a candy fruit under de door. Stickaby say he give usins a girt bag of candy fruits, if'n us go oop to wall tops.
But you two never went up there. Only Dwapple did, right?' Both mole babes nodded. But he tried to hold his patience.
"'Why did you not tell us all this before?'
"'Cause you'm never axed us, sir.'
Craga could not help smiling, despite her anxiety.
"'Well, friar, there's a bit of true mole logic. Wugger's right, though. We should have thought to ask them a lot earlier. Come on, you two. 'Tis dark out, and way past your bedtime.'
Friar Butty walked back to the abbey with them.
"'Craga, marm, I don't like the sound of this. Sounds like the marl foxes to me. Remember the night of the storm? These two practically described marl foxes to us, but no beast believed them.'
Craig felt for the abbey door handle.
"'Aye, that's true, friar. But I want no mention of what they've told us made to any beast yet. There's no need to cause alarm. Dwapple may be found hiding somewhere before morning. We'll just have to keep searching.
But what if we can't find him?
Then we'll just have to search the whole of Mossflower.'
Moken and the other marl foxes sat around a fire on the creek edge, roasting a couple of plump waterfowl. The rats sat farther away, cooking fish over their own fires. Moken blew a feather from his muzzle tip and watched it float off into the night.
"'Plenty of good victuals in this part of Mossflower. Nothing like a roasted bird after a good day's work, eh?'
The cloak, with its top tied securely, hung from the bough of a beech tree close by, bobbing about as Dwapple kicked and protested from inside his prison.
"'You fib a liars! Where Mr. Stickaby? Let me go! I want a bag of candy sweets!' You let Dwapple go.
Jeltor slapped the bag lightly.
Quiet in there, or I'll give you something to shout about.
The mouse babe did a dance of rage inside the cloak.
Rotten Foskers, touch a Dwapple, and I get you where a me slinger.
One of the vixens, Predak, stared across the flames at Moken.
You're very confident this is going to work, brother.
Moken tested the roasting bird with a knife tip.
Why do you say that? No reason it shouldn't work. You'll see those abbey beasts would part with anything rather than have one of their babes hurt. But speak up if you have a better idea.
Predak watched a moth shrivel as it ventured too near the firelight.
Though your idea's a good one,
But wouldn't it be better if we had another plan to fall back on in case anything goes wrong?
Loken's pale eyes glimmered as they reflected the flames.
Tell me, I'm not like our brother Jeltur. I'm always ready to listen to other schemes.
On the island, two rat guards marched up a ramp toward the main chamber. One of them whispered irately,
"Well, what is it tonight? There's no storm to disturb her."
The other rat's eyes flickered from side to side among the gloomy recesses and curves of the winding stone passage.
"Keep your voice down, mate. You never know who might be listening. Queen Sylth'll let us know what's on her mind soon enough, and you can bet your tail it won't be good news. It never is."
Outside, the great lake was calm, and the island quiet in dim, peaceful summer night. But the main chamber was lit like noontide, with banks upon banks of thick tallow candles ranged from floor to ceiling, their light reflecting amber and gold against the long brass wall plates the Marl Foxes used as mirrors. 60 rats of the guard command stood stiffly to attention, their black livery marking them apart from the brown of lower ranks. Each carried a leaf-bladed short spear and a small round buckler shield. Above, in the crisscrossed roof beams, more than 50 magpies swaggered and strutted, hopping boldly about, some even venturing to perch on the big circular candle-laden wheels that served as chandeliers. These were the tribe of Athrok, feared favorites of the High Queen. The two water rats from the shoreline patrol hurried to stand in formation with their fellow guard commanders, flinching as drops of hot wax from the ceiling fell on them each time a magpie caused one of the wheels to sway. After a while, even the magpies became still and silent, and an uneasy quiet fell over the chamber as Sylth made her entrance. The carriers bore their burden with exquisite care, setting the silken-curtained palanquin slowly down on a raised block of speckled marble at the chamber's far end. All eyes were now centered on the stone, though they had seen it many times before. A gasp went up from the onlookers as the vixen Lontur seemed to materialize from the speckled marble block. She had been standing there since the first rat entered, completely undetected, camouflaged by the stone's pattern. Lontur held her paws wide as two water rats hurried forward and draped the brown-green cloak about her shoulders. At a nod from her, the guard commanders raised their spears, calling out as in one mighty voice, "O Eternal Sylth, High Queen, live forever! Beauty be yours alone!" The harsh, rasping voice that issued from behind the curtains held a petulant note, like that of a spoiled young one.
"Noise! All night long! Noise! I hear the waters of that lake trying to eat away the rocks of my island. I hear the night breeze whispering like death, swirling about my castle, trying to find me. But what have you done about these things? Nothing! Sleep will not come. It flies away from me on dark wings. I cannot catch it. Why?"
The water rat commanders stood rigid, not daring to move a muscle, watched by the bright searching eyes of the magpies above them. Lontur strode up and down between the ranks, chastising the hapless rodents with her tongue.
"You are growing fat and idle while your queen suffers. There are no excuses for your stupidity. At night, while you are shirking your duties, the white ghost wanders the rooms and corridors of Castle Marl."
The queen's voice interrupted Lontur, shrill with fear.
"Fools! I know what you are thinking, but I have seen it."
At that point, one of the unfortunate guard commanders dropped his shield. The clang of metal upon stone echoed through the chamber. Athrok launched himself from a crossbeam, calling his tribe.
"Raka, raka, raka! Jeremclaw!"
The magpies zoomed down like lightning upon the wretched creature. Talons and beaks gripped fur, paws, tail, and tunic cruelly, lifting him bodily from the floor. Knocking other rats aside, the magpies rushed their prisoner forward, chattering gleefully as they dropped him in front of the marble block and stood surrounding him. The water rat lay cringing on the floorstones. Sylth's voice was harsh and accusing.
"Have you seen the white ghost?"
A thin smile played about Lontur's features. She adopted a tone of reasonable inquiry.
"Well, friend, have you seen the white ghost, or haven't you? Answer your queen."
The rat was in a quandary. If he said he had seen the white ghost, Sylth would make him describe it. If his description did not ring true, then what? His only hope was to tell the truth.
"Oh, High Queen, I have not seen the white ghost, I swear it."
It was the wrong answer.
The tasseled silk curtains shook as Silth raged insanely.
"Of course you haven't, because you've been sleeping on duty and idling your time away. Athrak, tell my protectors of the skies to remove this worthless heap of offal from Castle Marl. He shall answer for his laziness to the teeth of the deeps."
The rat gave a pitiful moan as Athrok's magpies seized him with wicked joy and bore him off. At an upstairs window, the curtains of the palanquin parted slightly. Silth watched the scene below on the lakeshore. Blazing torches had been spiked in a semicircle into the rock at the water's edge. The head of the guard command chopped a dead fish into chunks and hurled them into the dark waters. There were no shallows. The island was a massive, steep-sided mountain, its bottom resting on the lake bed. Unfathomable depths below. The water rats stood watching the surface, their stomachs knotted in terror, mouths dry with fear, as the waters began to thrash and churn. Dorsal fins and gold-green scales, hooked jaws and curved sets of ripping teeth flashed in the torchlights. Pike! The great freshwater predators set up bow waves as they stormed to the spot, whipping themselves into a feeding frenzy as they fought for gobbets of the dead fish. The condemned water rat screeched as Athrok's ruthless birds lifted him out over the depths.
"No, no, I lied. I've seen the white ghost. Eeyah!"
Silph listened to the splash as the rat's body was dropped to the waiting pike shoal. She shut the curtains with a triumphant chuckle.
"I knew he was lying all along. If I've seen the white ghost, then others have. Right, Lontour?"
The vixen Marlfox smiled slyly.
"It is as you say, O Great One."
Two water rat guard commanders unspiked the torches and extinguished them, sizzling in the lake.
"Is she still up at the window watching?"
"I don't know. Keep your eyes front, mate, unless she wants to feed the fish. You know 'tis death to look upon the queen." "Huh, 'tis death to do anything on this cursed rock. In fact, you can get slain for nothing. Look at poor old Riglent. All he did was drop his shield. That old queen was just looking for a chance to pick on some beast. This place gets worse." The other rat finished stacking the torches in a pile.
"Don't tell me, Cully. Why don't you leave? Lake full of pike and the sky guarded by magpies. What's to stop you, eh?"
In the slave pens, there was speculation over what had taken place at the lakeside. An ancient mouse rubbed the area above his footpaw, where the manacles had worn through his fur, causing a sore. "Sounded like one of the water rats being fed to the teeth of the deeps. Better one of them than a slave, that's what I say." A lean, tired-looking otter stared longingly through the bars at the water rat barracks.
"Ah, you're right there, matey. I don't suppose there's any chance that the one who got slung in the lake was Ullig."
Sitting up in the straw, a sturdy hedgehog maid muttered,
"No such luck, friend. You best keep quiet. Here comes the bully himself."
Slave Captain Ullig rattled the bars with his whip butt.
"Silence in there, or I'll pick a few of you lot out to feed the teeth of the deeps. Those pike ain't fussy what they eat. Even a couple of scrawny slaves would taste good to them."
Ullig sauntered off back to the barracks, watched by the silent slaves. When he had gone, a gaunt-eyed squirrel smashed his chains against the bars in helpless rage.
"Swaggering scum! I'd teach Ullig a lesson if I was free of these chains just for a moment."
The ancient mouse shook his head in despair.
"Free? There ain't no such word for a slave. I've been on this island so long I've forgotten what free means."
"And you've never seen any slave break free in all that time?" The old mouse smiled grimly at the young hedgehog who had asked the question.
"I saw lots of slaves break free, like that one in the corner."
He pointed to an emaciated bull, lying in a huddle, shivering so hard that his chains rattled constantly. Two other slaves were bathing his feverish brow with damp rags. The bull's eyes rolled wildly, and he whimpered and coughed as another tried to force water between his trembling lips. The old mouse nodded knowingly as he explained to the hedgehog maid,
"That poor beast'll be free afore dawn. Dead free. That's the only way you'll leave the Marl Foxes and slave captains and this island, matey. Tail first."
9. Florian Duggle-Wolf Wolfachop walked along the west wall top, calling out for Dwapple at the top of his voice. They had searched all morning, but not a trace of the little one could be found. Stopping briefly at the threshold over the main gate, the hare breathed deeply. Despite his constant chastisement of the mouse babe, he was secretly very fond of him. He did not notice the marl fox emerge from the ditch until the creature hailed him.
"Hey, rabbit!"
Florian stared regally down his nose at the marl fox.
"Huh. Rabbit yourself, you speckled scrap of jetsam. I'd come down there and grub some manners into your hide, if I had me bally stick with me, what? Count yourself lucky, measle features."
Russell, who had just emerged from the gatehouse, heard Florian's voice and called up to him.
"Hi there, Mr. Florian. Who are you talking to, yourself?"
The hare was in no mood to be bandied with.
"Myself? Pish tush, sir, never. Actually, I'm exchanging insults with one of those marl fox types down on the path, don't you know?"
Russell dashed off, roaring at the top of his lungs.
"Marl fox out on the path! Marl fox outside the gate!"
The abbey bells boomed out in alarm. In a short time, most of Redwall was atop the wall, armed with anything that came to paw. Ladles, shovels, curtain poles, and sundry everyday implements. Moken, the marl fox leader, backed off to the ditch edge on the path's far side, ready to flee if things got more dangerous. Craig's voice was low and menacing, but quite clear as the exchange took place.
"You've got a mouse, babe. One of our young'uns."
"Aye, that's right.
Had him since yesterday noon." "Clever of you. And now you've come to bargain. What do you want?"
"Oh, I don't know yet."
"What have you got in there?"
"A rich abbey like yours should be something valuable enough to save a life." End of side 2. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.